it's time to go under the helmet. This is the Gerald Riggs Show on TalkZone.com with your host, former All-Pro running back for the Falcons and the Redskins, Gerald Riggs.
All righty. Hello out there, folks. Glad to be back here again on another wonderful Wednesday where the weather is starting to change. The leaves are starting to show some color. And all of you folks who like to be outdoors like I do, it is such a wonderful thing. That if you're anywhere where, you know, the leaves change and you get a chance to see the change of the seasons, the fall coming in, it is one of the most spectacular things to see. I grew up in the desert in Las Vegas, Nevada, where, you know, the only thing what happened was the tumbleweeds would start to blow in the streets. And that was, back there when I was growing up, that was enough to bring a tear to your eye. But now, being able to see the seasons, go into the mountains and take a drive, take your bride, and just look at the leaves and the trees. And if you have kids, go out there and play in the yard and, you know, make a big pile of leaves and do all that stuff. It's neat. It's pretty cool. And I think you should do it. It's good to be able to play in the leaves again. All right? Change of seasons is a great time. And I'm enjoying it, and just as I am enjoying doing this too. Before I get started, a little housework here. I want to thank all my buddies over there at Bethlehem Center, Ted Bullock and his staff, and all the support that they give to me as I give them support too, and help out with their kids and their families, and try to bring up a different generation of young'uns nowadays, because it is something else out there with the way that society kind of dictates to you how you're, you know, you want to raise your kids and do things at home, and you start taking the Lord out of everything, and everything just goes crazy, and they wonder why this country is the way it is. I know that my opinions don't reflect what Talk Zone Radio is all about, but again, it's my opinion, and I think that we put a little bit of that back in, put a little bit of God back in everything that's going on out there, and believe me, I think things will change around. But that's still left to be seen. Congress needs to. They need to, all of them need to be baptized. All right. And also, Waddle Media, Mike Waddle and Ginger. I tell you what, you want some class A work done for your company. Something that will really get, the people to look at you and recognize you as being one of the best in the industry just by looking at the work that they do. They are one of the people there that are really behind me, and I greatly appreciate them, and they have been a blessing to me. And me and this getting this whole thing started, and it's going to be a journey to where we go with it, because I think there's a lot of great things on the horizon. We have visions, I have visions, and as a whole, when you have two join together to basically not only just preach the word of God through what you do, but let people see that how He blesses you as you go along. We're on one fantastic journey, and I can't wait to see what it's going to be like long down the road. All right, we've got a couple of guests going to be on today with us. We're going to talk a little bit about Denver Broncos in the early part of the show, because they are really one of the hottest teams around, and one of the most intriguing teams, in that nobody gave this man Peyton Manning, and you'll leave me, in my early day of doing radio and in the early part of his career, he was the guy that I just got tired of, because it seems as though the game, the passing game in particular, Peyton Manning had a complete control over it, unlike any other quarterback in the league. And he is now really is gone around to the point to where he's the best in the game right now, you have to say, as far as throwing touchdowns. 510 that he got in breaking the record this past weekend, this past week against San Francisco. And everybody knew that it was probably going to be he was probably going to get that record. But you know what? It almost seems as though when he get 510, I think he ended up with 511 altogether through four touchdowns in the game. I felt like, you know what? On this night against San Francisco, he probably could have gone to 600. I mean, because they couldn't stop him. There was nothing they can do. And that's one thing that I really, really appreciate about him and being an ex-player. We talk about all the things that go on the field and how important it is to have a good line and, you know, the defensive guys and, you know, some quarterbacks are for the most part are good. And it's great to have that guy who's going to be a leader on your team and all that. But Peyton Manning takes it to a whole different level. He knows the defenses like the back of his hand. And when he, the thing that he does most, and we're gonna, I'm gonna save a few of these comments here because we're gonna have a guy come on here a little bit, by the name of Mike Kliss, who is from the Denver Post. And, you know, talk a little bit about, you know, what they've been able to do there. But the thing that really gets me about Peyton Manning is that, you know, he finds matchups that most guys would say, you know, I'm going to let this kind of dictate to me what I'm going to do. I'm going to check off. I'm going to go for a run. No, no, not with Peyton. He is not afraid. He finds those matchups. And I think in looking at the defenses and what he does out there on the field, there's never been anybody like him. Never. Because in this day and age of players who, and there's a lot of specialized players now, defense and offense, linebackers who can run like the wind. And sometimes you got to be careful about if you put a back on them, putting them in a route, because you know this linebacker can probably cover him pretty well. So you tend to stay away from those type of things. But there are other matchups out there on the field that certainly would be more conducive for you to, as a quarterback, to complete a play, make a big play. He finds them. Peyton Manning is a master of it, and I have a newfound respect for him. As much as I got tired of hearing about the whole family, the whole Manning family, he and his brother and the first brothers to, you know, quarterback championships teams and the dad and yada, yada, yada. I got so tired of it one time, but you know what? You cannot dispute the work that he has done and put in and the players that have become great players around him. That's the true definition of a leader and a legend, as he will go down in NFL lore at some point in time in his career. Then we're going to shift gears a little bit later on in the show, and we're going to go and talk to a guy by the name of Brad Sham. And he is a play-by-play guy for the Dallas Cowboys. As much as I, and the people who know me, I always tell them, don't drink the Dallas Cowboy Kool-Aid. But what can we say right now? I mean, Jerry Jones has to be the happiest man in the NFL. Not just because he's an owner and he has a gazillion bucks and he's got the Taj Mahal of NFL stadiums right now, with Victoria's Secrets and all that sort of stuff. I've yet to go to see the stadium, but you know, if some of you out there probably have been there and know what it's all about and all that sort of stuff, but that's great. But he is just a smiling away. Oh, Jerry, look at him just a smiling. I think that if he smiles anymore, his teeth are going to slide out of his mouth. But he is so happy right now with the success of his team. The Dallas Cowboys are on top of the heap in the NFC East, and he is just loving it. And I almost forgot. But last week I had a absolute brain freeze, and I couldn't think about all the teams in the NFC East. And I played in the NFC East at one point in time. And I don't want to attribute it to, you know, the headshots and all that, even though doing this kind of keeps me from, you know, going into the vegetated state, because you at least give me the opportunity to think. And when, as long as I'm thinking, as long as I'm trying to do something and I'm talking, you know, the things are not, you know, kind of just dissipating right before my eyes, which they still do. But this gives me at least a little way, a little bit of a way to deal with it on a daily basis. But I could not think of all the teams in the NFC East last week. And the one team that I forgot, the Washington Redskins. I sat here and I named off the Philadelphia Eagles, the Dallas Cowboys, and the Giants. And then I was thinking, and I went to a team that used to be there, the Cardinals, way back in the day. That shows you my age. And sometimes we only relate to the things that are, I guess, within our time, sometimes or whatever. But that's what happened. And I don't know how in the world that happened. When I was listening back to the show, listening to the show afterwards, and I was thinking to myself, did I just do that? Yeah, I did it. So all of you out there who think I'm a little nutty, it was just temporary. And I just had, like I said, a little brain freeze. It was something that, I don't know. It just happened. All right. A little bit too. I'm going to get my little spill on a guy who's part of one of my teams. And at the same time, I cannot stand him as a player. He drives me absolutely nuts. And I've been looking at articles now, getting ready to go. As you know, the NBA basketball season, they're in their preseason mode right now. A few more games and they'll start in the season. But my favorite team that I've always loved growing up, certainly being out west, the Lakers, the Los Angeles Lakers, the team to me that had more superstars on a regular basis than you can shake a stick at. We talk about all the other teams, Chicago, and when Michael was there, you know, the Knicks and back in the heyday and all that stuff. They, you know, that's about the only other team to me that has as many stars. But the Lakers, as a kid, I love the Lakers. My mother loves the Lakers. You know, so my family members loved watching the Lakers. But this one guy, I'm going to call him the official Laker killer now. He has done his job there over the last few years. He has been a star there. They brought him in, you know, as a high school kid. And I think that really, in my opinion, Kobe Bryant is probably, is to me, in my opinion, still a brat. Still the 36-year-old brat who's, you know, just like he was when he came out of high school, little spoiled kid. And they spoiled him. They spoiled him with winning, spoiled him with championships, spoiled him with giving him a good ton of money. He's a rich, actually, he's the highest paid player in the NBA. And I think that that in itself, Kobe thinks that that's the reason why every decision that goes through the Lakers needs to come through him. And I think that's poppycock. There's no way in the world. There have been other players who, Jordan in the day, Magic in the day, certainly other, you know, well-noted players back in the day that they, it's like, hey, you know, if I'm going to be, I'm part of this organization, I'm the face of the team or whatnot. Well, you know, let me be in on a little bit of it and let me, you know, kind of shed my little, you know, spill on some of the players that you may be, you know, thinking about bringing in here or whatnot. And that's fine. But Kobe in the way that he does it and listening to some of the stories that have come out of the, you know, with dealing with some of the free agents or guys who've had an opportunity to play there in LA and build that team up and keep that team where it's at. There's no one out there that wants to play with this man. No one out there that wants to play with Kobe Bryant. And that as a team, as an owner of a team, that is something that you're talking about a red flag. You throw out the red flag, the grenades, the landmines, whatever it takes, to let people know that, you know, we're willing to make a change now. All superstars come and they go. And in this case, Kobe Bryant needs to go. I'm not sitting here hating on him as much as I just like the way that he has done things within the ability or responsibility that they have put in his court. And he should not have anything to do with the day-to-day operations of how Kupchak, who's the GM there, puts that team together to bring upon another star. They can have, they could have had and should have had some other stars there in LA by this time. No, not with Kobe Bryant there. I want to talk a little bit about that a little bit later on in the show. But, you know, I just, you know, I had to get that out of my system. I had to get it out because Kobe needs to do some other things. We're going to take a quick break, right? And then we're going to be able to probably come back here and get into some Denver Broncos talk, of course, and we're going to do that and move along because we got some other things on the plate. Oh, and also before I go to this break, I want to say here in Chattanooga, Tennessee, we say goodbye to a legend, Luther Massengill, who had been in the radio industry for 70 years. Very few people have ever been around that long. It would only be a blessing. I can be around a few years, a little bit longer too, but over 70 years, a wonderful man. We lost him on Monday. He has gone on to that, as people may want to say, that studio in the sky. But he was a great man. I had the opportunity to talk with him on a few occasions and kind of pick his brain. But he is no longer with us. So all you folks out there who are from Chattanooga, who is listening to the show somewhere else on the internet, we say goodbye to Luther Massengill. All right, we're gonna take a quick break. We'll be right back on Talk Zone Radio, TalkZone.com, the Gerald Riggs Show, Underneath the Helmet. We'll be right back.
Let's go back under the helmet for more of the Gerald Riggs Show. Here's Gerald Riggs.
All righty, folks. We are back. We thank you for joining us right here in the studios here in Chattanooga. Actually, I'm in Chattanooga, Tennessee. And, you know, folks are like, you know, it's pretty neat when you can do that everywhere. You can go places and talk to folks no matter where they are these days. Oh, technology is something. And I consider myself a dinosaur. I'm still, I would still like the rotary phone. if I could get one. But I don't think it would go through pretty well. Be pretty funny to see the folks trying to do it these days. Teenagers would absolutely go crazy. They would just start to, you know, go like they were being in convulsions and probably blow up or something because if they were to see a rotary phone, they couldn't text on it or whatnot. Oh, that would, you know what? That would be a great disciplinary thing to keep in the home. Go to your room and you're only allowed to use a rotary phone. Oh my gosh. I've just come up with the parent thought of the year. All right, folks, let's kind of switch gears here and get back to make some sense of things. We're going to go to Denver and talk with Mike Klitz. Mike, are you there?
I am, Gerald. I'm with you on that rotary phone. You know, I was reluctant to go to the cell phone. I was one of the last to do that. And then I had the flip phone up until last summer when I went swimming with it. It got in my swimming trunks.
That was it, huh?
And now the Denver Post is insisting I get with the times, and I'm now on day two of my I-6.
Oh, and, wow. Well, you're going high kite when you do it.
Yeah, I did. And by the way, I don't know, I was resistant to the change to the I-6 because I thought it would be too big. But I'll tell you this, you got it. It definitely is something where I don't know why I waited so long. This is, I learned it's easier for me to use this phone in 2 days than it was my other phone I had, smartphone I had. It took that
really
about a year and a half. I still didn't understand it.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? I was kind of in that same, I was in that same boat too until my wife one day saw me with this little phone in my hand and everybody thought that I had this great screensaver type of thing on the front of the screen. You know, where you get that, you know, with all those lines and all that. And I'm like, no, it's how many times I've dropped it. You know, it's not a screensaver. That's just the way it is.
Well, they do come with covers. I got one of them on. So.
Oh yeah, you have to. You have to because it is expensive to replace the screens on those things. But I didn't go with the Android. My wife got me an Android and you know what? I can't do without it now. It's been pretty neat. But anyway, again, folks, we're talking to Mike Klitz. He's from the Denver Post out there, and we're talking about Denver Broncos football. And Mike, let me start with asking you, you know, this Denver team is probably the one of, right now, one of the prime places in the NFL you want to play. And I have to attribute that to John Elway and what he's been able to do. In your opinion, what's been the biggest thing that John Elway has done with coming here and so, of course, taking his team over with that ex-player eye? Being able to do what he's been able to do.
Well, that's easy. He was able to sign Peyton Manning a couple of years ago.
But even before Peyton Manning, because, I mean, he's only been there 2 years, but something has had to be put together, this whole journey.
Here's the deal. John Elway inherited a team. In 2010, the Broncos were 4-12. Mm-hmm. And Josh McDaniels was the coach, and he was in a video scandal, and the Broncos, their reputation was smudged. The 4-12 was, you know, Pat Bowlen, it was one of only five losing seasons that Pat Bowlen has had in his now 31 years of ownership of the team. And they had a little videotape scandal. It was the lowest point. Elway inherited a team that was not only 4-12, but they had Kyle Orton and Tim Tebow as their quarterbacks. They started 1-4 in Elway's first year of 2011. And Elway told John Fox, you got to get Tebow ready. We got to see what this guy can do. And they wound up, through Tebow magic, having that tremendous six-game winning streak by one miracle after another.
Yeah,
and they made the playoffs and won the AFC West with only an 8-8 record, but they won the AFC West and they won a playoff game against Pittsburgh. If you remember, when Tebow threw to Demaryius Thomas,
the big play.
That was still maybe the greatest single moment that Denver has seen in sports. And then Peyton Manning becomes available, and there's fear he's damaged goods. He's going to be 37 years old. He's coming off four neck surgeries. A team like the Houston Texans, for instance, I think would have had a great shot at Peyton Manning.
Yeah, they did.
But Matt Schaub was coming off a Pro Bowl year, and there was too much unknown, too much risk with Manning. They didn't even get in the sweepstakes for him. But Elway and John Fox were aggressive in their pursuit of Manning. They got him, and they've been back-to-back 13-3s, and they're 5-1 this year. And then Elway's done a good job of, you know, building a cast around Manning, and he keeps it simple, really. You know, he got the receivers, first of all. He got Wes Welker in the slot last year. Mm-hmm. They drafted Julius Thomas. Their very first draft, they got Julius Thomas in the fourth round. And, so that was a find. They inherited, Demaryius. This year, they wanted a little more speed at receiver. They got Emmanuel Sanders. Mm-hmm. And then their defense was not up to par with the rest of the team last year. They had a lot of injuries, and they went out and they got DeMarcus Ware to pair with Von Miller, and now those two are unquestionably the top two pass rush, the best pass rushing duo in the NFL. They got Aqib Talib as a physical corner. They got T.J. Ward at strong safety. They got a little bit more. I'd like to say they've got, for the first time since I've been here, I think they've got some junkyard dog on that defense.
Yeah,
and it's been showing so far, and they look like, this looks like the most complete team the Broncos have had, since their Super Bowl years when Elway was a quarterback.
Wow, and that's saying an awful lot, but I got to ask you though, you know, even though everybody's been watching, they've been so enamored with the fact of what Peyton has been able to do, and you know, I even said here on the show that I have a newfound respect for him, as much as I kind of disliked him over the years for, you know, all the wrong reasons. I suppose, put it that way, but they are successful now.
What reasons? I'm curious. What did you like?
Well, I felt that it was just kind of, you know, the NFL, they were really pushing to make a face, you know, with somebody else. And they, you know, it was his brother, it was his dad, you know, all those things. I kind of got tired of that. I know, just as a player, I'm like, you know, an ex-player, I'm like, there are a lot of other parts to it that make him what he is. And I felt that, you know, it was just pushed too much. And I, you know, that to me, the Shield, when they find somebody they want to make a face, that's what their intent and really bent on doing that. And they did it with Peyton. But at this point in time in his career, man, I'm telling you what, I would have loved to have been on the field with a guy like him who loves to find matchups, who loves to find, you know, things on the defense that you don't commonly see or talk about necessarily even in the meetings. And I've been in meetings. We know how quarterbacks look at in defenses and all that, but he is a master at matchups. And I love to see him and how he goes about preparing that team or what he's going to do in the game. Yeah, he's going to take his shots. And he maybe once in a while kind of take a shot to where, okay, they may pick me off. That's fine. But I'm going to find the right matchups. And that's what he does so well. But another question.
Right.
Yeah, another question real quick, though, Mike. They're having a lot of success with him. That's true. But what about the running back situations? The Monty Ball, you know, he's been there. You know, right now Hillman he's been fantastic or whatnot. But can they just continue to be as successful they are with, to me, not so, that running game is not up to par with the passing game right now?
No, and it never will be. You know, this team is built around Manning. It's, you know, Gerald, first of all, it's promising what's gone on the last couple of weeks. It was the running back situation was the biggest question mark coming into the year.
Mm-hmm.
Because in that room, you have Monte Ball, who is a second year guy, no NFL starts.
Mm-hmm.
Ronnie Hillman, a third year guy, no NFL starts.
Mm-hmm.
CJ Anderson, a second year guy, no NFL starts. And then three undrafted rookies. And so there was no NFL starting experience in that room as they went forward. Now, they did go forward because they believed in Monte Ball, and they did believe in Ronnie Hillman. People here, and I say the media and the fans, were down on Ronnie Hillman because he was unproductive his first 2 years. And when he did get a chance, he had a tendency to come up with a big fumble. So, but the team, the coaches still believed in him. And their faith is getting rewarded here the last 2 weeks with Monte Ball down. Monte Ball really looked good in the off season, and then right before training camp he came down with an emergency appendectomy.
Yeah,
and that set him back. And I tell you, even though he came back in 2 weeks, and I don't think he was quite the same. And then he pulled the groin, and maybe that groin he's he's going to be out a couple more weeks. You know, maybe that was a blessing for him because it can get his strength of the rest of his body back by the time he comes back for the final 6 weeks of the season. In the meantime, Ronnie Hillman has finally emerged here the last. He had a 100-yard game. He had his first start. He had 74 yards and 2 touchdowns the second start. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. We'll see. You know, there's a lot of running backs in this league, as you know, Gerald, who can do it for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Can you do it over, you know, an extended period of time? We'll see about that. And, but I'll say this. The running game has to be adequate because it'll never, the offensive line, their two best pass, their two best offensive linemen, Ryan Clady and Lewis Vasquez, are pass protectors more than they are run blockers. Clady's a dancing bear at left tackle. He's not a physical run blocker. Lewis Vasquez is a sturdy anchor as a right guard, but he doesn't really have the movement to get out there on the run game really. So, and look, their best player is Peyton Manning. Their second best player is Demaryius Thomas. Their third best player is Julius Thomas. Their fourth best is Emmanuel Sanders. Their fifth best is Wes Welker. And think about that again. Wes Welker is their fifth best guy on their team when he was, you know, for years, the best or second best on the Patriots.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get to the running backs. Monte Ball, Ronnie Hillman is the sixth best. So when you break it down like that, it's always going to be a pass-first team.
Mm-hmm.
And they run just kind of this team
just
will always just kind of run. They'll run the ball just so the receivers can catch their breath so they can make another, you know, route a couple plays down the line.
Yeah. Well, you're right about that one. And my sentiments exactly as far as that running game is concerned. You've got to be able to kind of, to put some little bit of pressure on it because when it comes down to it and teams know that if they can pressure him, and I think the offensive line, they've done a good job being, they don't have to worry about all the run blocking all the time. So they're more or less in protect mode all the time. So that helps Peyton Manning out, but they're going to have to kind of pick it up in the running game. You ask me if they really want to get over that hump. Yeah, it'll get you there, but you're going to need some of that to also keep you there.
Right. And that was the talk, you know, after the Seattle Super Bowl fiasco.
Yeah.
You know,
that's right.
That this team was too finesse. It was too precision and not enough, you know, rough, tough, grind it out, you know, hammer away type of team. And that's the type of teams you faced in January.
Right.
You know, these cold weather teams, the Baltimore Ravens, you know, Joe Flacco will never put up Peyton Manning numbers, but he might wind up with more Super Bowl rings.
Yeah.
You know, and I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
But look, when you have Peyton Manning on your team, this is what you are. You just have to take your, you know, I think he gets you there. You hope that his offense, his passing offense, and you surround him now with a better defense. Right now, after that San Francisco game on Sunday night, Gerald, objectively speaking, I know I cover the team. Objectively speaking, it looks like the Broncos are the team to beat right now, especially with Seattle kind of foundering.
Yeah, I agree with you on that one.
Okay. We'll see.
All right, buddy. I appreciate you coming on with me. We'll do this again, Mike.
Yeah, it was an honor. You know,
all right.
If you saw the top of my the color of my hair, you would know that I've been around long enough to have seen you play every year. So you were a good one.
Well, it's a blessing, as I say, that when people still remember. So I greatly thank you for your time. And like I say, we'll do this again on down the road. Hopefully they can continue to have some success there, and we can talk about some other things too.
Call anytime, Gerald.
All right, Mike. Take care, buddy. All right, Mike Kliss from the Denver Post talking about the Broncos, Peyton Manning, John Elway, and all of those situations that are going on right there in Denver. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to shift gears and go to the other team out there. Well, not quite out there, but the one that's right now seems to be the other hot team in the league, and that's the Dallas Cowboys. We're going to talk with their play-by-play man. So all you Cowboys fans out there, strap it on and get ready to saddle it up, okay? We'll be right back here more on the Gerald Riggs Show. Talk Zone, TalkZone.com, Gerald Riggs Network. We'll be right back.
Game on. Now, let's go back under the helmet for more of the Gerald Riggs Show. Here's Gerald Riggs.
All righty, folks, I am back, and thank you. Gosh, it was great to be able to talk a little bit about Denver Broncos and, you know, certainly out this way in Chattanooga, Tennessee. I'm in this corridor where I got the Titans on one side, the Falcons on the other, and the Falcons are they're overseas. And I think a lot of people right now are saying, you know what, it's good that maybe they need to get away for a little bit. The only thing is they're going to take on the Detroit Lions, who they're not going to be a very easy team to deal with either, especially from the offensive line standpoint. We know what that defensive line for Detroit can do. But we're not worried about them right now. We've got a special guest coming in the line. We've got Goats and talk about the Dallas Cowboys. And I don't get a chance to do this very often, but you know what? Some days we have to humble ourselves and pay attention to what is good in the NFL because it is good and they are hot right now. And speaking of hot, we're talking to the hot play-by-play man, Brad Sham from Dallas Cowboys. Brad, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. It's tough to take the Washington out of the player, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is.
You were raised well, like so many people, to really dislike this franchise down here. So
it started a long time ago. You're right.
No, I understand. And then when you went to Washington, it couldn't have gotten any easier. And believe me, I've been doing this. I'm blessed. This is my 36th year with this with this team, and I've had the opportunity to work with every head coach they've had. And one of the things I really understand is how much so many people hate this team.
Wow, you know what? I think it's always been that moniker of America's team, and a lot of folks, you know, depending on where you are, you know, they still always want to recognize their team as the team. Sometimes even regardless of the record, but it's been that way. That star has always indicated that, and no matter what they say right now, even though I think I saw some report that who was it? I think they said Denver right now was a team now. Everybody kind of identifies with.
That's fine. They can have it. That's whatever.
But staying on the radar until it's time. That's what you want to do. It's great to be out front, but you still want to stay under the radar until it's time.
As you know, it's really hard for this franchise to stay under the radar because they've been relevant. They haven't been good all the time, but they've been relevant since the middle 60s. Wow. And because of the people who put those teams together, who ran them, who put star players on them, going all the way back to Don Meredith and then Staubach, and because their division fights were always in the big media centers. They were with people in New York, Philadelphia, and Washington.
Oh yeah, mm-hmm.
And that put them under the spotlight even more. And you know, then they won a bunch, and they've always had interesting players. And so we're used to it, and we understand it. You know, America's Team was a name that NFL Films came up with, not the Cowboys. And the Cowboys never did anything to try to run away from it either.
Oh, of course not. I mean, like when you have something there that fits like that, especially when you're used to winning. Landry had and of course that's my time, you know, we're dealing with Tom Landry. You know, that team was, I mean, when you saw the Dallas Cowboys, it was, you know, it was the team. Everybody in there, it was kind of like that Notre Dame network, you know, on the weekends, you were going to see a Dallas Cowboy game no matter where you were.
And that's why a lot of people hated Notre Dame and why a lot of people hate the Dallas Cowboys. We get it.
yeah. All right, let's get started with a little bit of this team here now. That's, Jerry has to be extremely happy with the fact that this offense right now is, you know, it seems like it's come around to be what, you know, what they've always wanted it to be, you know, a star quarterback, a running back that's really kind of shining right now. And they seem to be really they're just hot right now. That's the only way I can say it. And they're really doing some great things with their offense.
Yeah, the offense has been put together, and you know, a running back's gotta really love this because they have been put together with great intentionality. They had a good quarterback to begin with, but it's been a process of 4 years or so of building the offensive line to a place where they could do what they philosophically wanted to do. You know, you can want a fast break all you want, and if you can't rebound, it's not going to help you very much.
No.
And so now they've got a play caller who's completely in sync with the head coach, and they've got a good quarterback with a good core of receivers, and they've got a really, really good offensive line. And mm-hmm. then when you have those things, as you well know, you can kind of dictate how a lot of things go. And one of the things I like best about football is that one of the things you can dictate is what the defense does, because their defense is not talented enough. They're good guys trying hard. I don't mean to disparage them.
Yeah.
But talent is talent. They're not talented enough to have great success for 60 plays a game. But for 45 plays a game, when your offensive line is dominating the other team and pushing them around a little bit, and even when they're not dominating them, they're playing real physical, well, you can go play like that.
Mm-hmm. And that has to be the case, because with the defense giving up basically 21 points a game, that means that their offense still has to be able to score. And at the same time, they are keeping that defense off of the field enough to where these guys can get some break. Because, as you say, that talent or that lack of talent will show if you get a lot of guys beat up or banged up and your defense is not being able to get off the field.
Yeah, and I don't even know if it takes getting beat up or banged up. I mean, look, I'm waiting for – they're off to a great start.
Yes, they are.
I hope it continues. I think that it's not a fluke. I think it's based on things that are too solid for it to be a fluke.
Hmm.
But it's also a long season, and there are going to come times when they're going to get their weaknesses are going to be exposed. These coaches are good. They're all getting paid. The other players are getting paid.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to have to deal with doing the best with who they are and what they have at some point. So, you know, they are off to a great start, and it's exciting here, and the networks all love it because the ratings go up.
Yes, they do.
The fact of the matter is that they have, like, one of the good things about their game last week, and it applies this week again with Washington coming to town, is you have to deal both with the division games, mm-hmm. which is a whole different deal, and you have to deal with success when you're good. It's mm-hmm. one thing to be, you know, under the radar, although I don't know how much Dallas can ever be under the radar.
Yeah.
But you can be if no one thinks you're going to be any good, a little bit. And now all of a sudden, no one thinks that you're not going to be any good. And now everybody's gunning for you. And the same people, when you went to fill up your car and go to the grocery and run errands for your wife and all that, the same people, you're laughing because you've lived it, see? Those same people who either wouldn't talk to you or were telling you how sorry you were 6 weeks ago, they're buying your dinner now. You can't buy a drink anywhere in town because your money's no good here. Why, you just come right on in. And
that's right.
Right? It's a whole different thing to deal with, and you have to learn how to deal with that success in the same kind of way that you have to learn how to deal with adversity. And doing it just because they won one game mm-hmm. or two games or four games, that doesn't mean they've learned how to do it yet.
No. I've defended Romo over the last couple of years, and I've always felt that he was a guy who had plenty of talent. He could go out there and manage a game fairly well, but it was always most people didn't want to look at the fact that, you know, either the line was breaking down, he didn't have that running back in there consistently, and the receivers were getting hurt, and it always kind of the onus was always on him to try to turn things around, but that's almost impossible. But right now, I think people are really being able to see what he can do under these circumstances when everything is kind of like a well-oiled machine right now within the offense.
Yeah, I think that he's a top 10 quarterback. I've always thought it, and not always, not the day he walked in the door as an undrafted free agent and was a mm-hmm. third stringer. Bill Parcells knew what he could be, and
right.
various coaches have brought him along. And along the way, my belief is that people, especially fans and a lot of people in our business, Gerald, have forgotten as they come to criticize him. All of his so-called peers to whom he is compared, they're all high draft picks. I mean, you know, Russell Wilson now is a 3, and Breeze was a high 2, and
mm-hmm.
Brady's the only one who was a 6.
Yeah.
Who are the other quarterbacks in the league he's not as good as Peyton Manning, first pick in the draft. Roethlisberger, first round pick. Eli, mm-hmm. first pick in the draft. Rivers, fourth pick in the draft. The whole league said, no, thank you. That's okay. Thanks mm-hmm. for shopping.
Yeah.
And he has not only persevered and made a team, he's played the most demanding, possibly the most difficult position in all of sports. Hockey goalies might disagree, but he's playing a very demanding position, and he's broken all their records.
Yeah.
And what he hasn't done is win games after the regular season was over.
Mm-hmm. That's
and
it.
That's when quarterbacks get judged.
Mm-hmm.
So, rightly or wrongly, fairly or un, that's when quarterbacks and coaches get judged. Mm-hmm. So, he hasn't done that, and as you say, there have been a lot of reasons for it. His line hadn't always been good enough, his complimentary cat, whatever, and then he's made some mistakes, but he hasn't.
Yeah, he has.
If he'd made all the mistakes, if he was as bad as people wanted to make him out to be, he couldn't have played 13 years in the league and,
absolutely
and been
not.
A good player. He's a good not. Player, but now you see what happens when the quarterback doesn't have to hit a 6-run homer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's just too hard, and that's why the teams that you played for were so blessed to have you. Guys who can run the ball, and the style that you ran, the style that DeMarco Murray is running, guys who are punishing, guys who lend the offensive line to dictating the pace and tempo of the game, let those big guys lean on people a little bit,
mm-hmm.
that makes everybody around them better, including the defense.
Yes, I totally agree with you. We're talking with Brad Sham, who's the play-by-play for Dallas Cowboys. And, Brad, in closing, the defense, we haven't said much about them, but, they have a lot. They've got a long way to go. Like I say, the offense right now, I think, is in a reverse role where they're carrying everything right now. But they still need to get a pass rush. I think they only have 7 sacks
to
whatever?
Guess what? Parcells used to say, you can't go down to the Texaco station and dial up 1-800-PASS-RUSH. I tweeted something the other day. A guy tweeted one of the a fan tweeted a guy who works for the Cowboys website who has been an NFL scout about, okay, what can we do about this pass rush?
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't even part of it, but I jumped in and I said, what part of their pass rush surprises you or even disappoints you? This is why a lot of people didn't think they were going to be good. They're going to get a little help when they get their second-round pick, DeMarcus Lawrence, back, not for this game, but next week. Mm-hmm. That's why they drafted him. And he'll probably be the best pass rusher they've got. Anthony mm-hmm. Spencer is fighting his way back, and he'll get a little bit better every week. They got a couple of other veteran guys who but they're supplementary pieces, Jeremy Mincy and Terrell McClain. And
mm-hmm.
Nobody's talking about DeMarcus Ware or Bob Lilly or Brian Arakpo or Ryan Kerrigan. Nobody's talking about that kind of player. That's not what they have.
Mm-hmm.
And they knew that. You can't rebuild everything overnight. What they've done is they're extremely well coached. They're playing assignment sound football. They're mixing blitzes well. They're not sacking anybody. Sometimes, not last week, sometimes they are making the quarterback uncomfortable enough
yeah.
to be effective. And really, they're great. What you really have to do is make the quarterback uncomfortable. If you have, I don't care if it's, the kid in St. Louis who lit him up and the Cowboys wound up winning the game, but, an undrafted rookie free agent or Eli Manning, I don't care who it is, if you let an NFL quarterback stand back there and, polish up his shoes and pick them out of his cleats and all that stuff, he'll find somebody open.
It's hard to win.
Yeah, it is. Mm-hmm. And so that's something that they have to deal with. They have to find a way. Their personnel is not going to change. So those players are going to have to find a way to play a little better, and they're going to have to manufacture a pass rush with other means than having four really talented guys put their hand on the ground and rush you, because they don't have those guys. Mm-hmm. But they didn't have those guys coming in. So we'll see. That's part of why they play 16 of them.
Mm-hmm. Brad, last question. Do you think that think Jerry and the coach are going to get a deal done here before the season's over with, or you think it's going to kind of hinge on the way they finish up this year?
I actually don't think either one of those things. I think it would mildly surprise me if they did a deal during the year, because if you were either side, why would you do that? If you're the guy with the money, why would you pay? Forget about depersonalize Jerry Jones, take him out of it. If you're the owner of the business, why would you pay your employee more than you had to sooner than you had to? So you wait and see what happens. And look, if he does a great job, then you know what it's going to cost you, and you're paying him pretty well anyway. And they've got a really good working relationship as well as a long-time personal relationship. And the head coach is one of the most focused, disciplined people I've ever known. And he's aware that he doesn't have a contract past this year, but he's not worried about it.
Yeah.
And if he was 1-6, he wouldn't be worried about it. He'd be worried about having the best Wednesday practice he could have.
Mm-hmm.
And if they continue to do well, then if they can't reach a deal, someone else will reach a deal with him, and that will that means they'll. But I don't think it'll happen during the year. I'd be a little surprised.
Yeah, but we have to say though too that it's just human nature. He may not worry about it, but I'm sure that somewhere it's in the back of his mind. May not be till after the season that he wants to address it, but want to be able to say.
It's a great topic, and I had this conversation with another reporter here who's been around, since the 90s yesterday, and this guy was maintaining exactly what you're saying. Hey, he's thinking about it. Don't worry. Mm-hmm. It's human nature. He's thinking about it. And my point is, he's been making $4 million a year for the last 4 years, and $3 million a year, as far as I know, for the 4 years before that. He's careful with his money. He doesn't have to, and he is not a guy. They've all got egos. He's not such a prideful guy that he is going to say, "I need more money than X coach," or some other hotshot college coach comes in and gets paid a boatload. That's not going to bother. Might bother his agent. It won't bother him, and I really believe that, like I said, I think he's aware of the fact that he doesn't have a contract, but he's really not worried about it.
Yeah. All right then, Brad. We're going to do this again, man.
I look forward to it. And, I got such great respect for the person you are and the player you were. It's just a real, real honor for me to be with you.
Well, great, man. We will, give me a call anytime you need me, but you have a good one, and I'd say this begrudgingly almost, have a good year.
Thanks, Gerald.
All right.
Appreciate
take care,
you.
Brad.
Thank you.
All right, buddy. Take care. All right, folks. We're going to take a quick break here, and what do we have to do? We're going to stay in here until the show is over with. Thanks, Brad, for coming on there. And that was Brad Sham from the Dallas Cowboys. Talking about cowboy stuff, and like I say, folks, that took a lot for me to be able to sit there and even sometimes even dial the number, but I wanted to, I try to give everybody a chance. The Dallas Cowboys too. You have to give them, show them a little bit of love. Even though I don't do it on a regular basis, because everybody knows, and who knows me, know that I take shots at them, and certainly the fans. You know, I always tell them to take off all the belts and shoestrings and stay away from high-rise buildings when the Dallas Cowboys season starts to fall apart. But right now, they look pretty doggone good. Sorry we didn't get a chance to, you know, to get into maybe some other topics or not, but, you know, when you have an opportunity to talk to some of the people who are there, who, you know, are with the team and they are there on a regular basis to, you know, like I say, get into the kind of the nuts and bolts of what's happening, with the team and, on the field. It's always pretty neat. Neat for her to say that. I was going to go into this whole thing about Kobe Bryant, today because I'm an LA Laker fan. And, this is a guy who to me he's just killing the Lakers. And all of you folks out there who may be Laker fans who are listening here on Talk Zone, they have the Lakers, I think, have been going the wrong way with trying to really build this organization back up. Mitch Kupchak is the GM. Certainly, they lose Buss. You know, God rest his soul. And it's been a long road to get back to where everybody wants to come and play for the Lakers. No one has ever in Laker history been a player there, from Kareem to Magic, Worthy, Jerry West, whomever, back in the day, where they would look at that organization and say, hey, they are winners. They're winning all the time. That's where I want to play. If anybody had the opportunity to go through LA and it made sense, they would get them there. And that's what happened with Shaq. That's what, you know, what happened with some of the, with Steve Kerr. They brought them in with the notion that these guys here are just going to contribute to, you know, putting us back in the winning ways. Well, they didn't factor in the fact that they still have Kobe. And Kobe is a guy that, for whatever reason, he has, I don't know if it was because when Buss passed it, he maybe said, hey, take care, Kobe, or whatever, or something. But Kobe is the guy that seems to be the one thing that everybody is staying away from. He's like the vinegar, you know, in the contracts. Nobody wants to play with him. Everybody feels that he comes to a point to where his attitude and the way that he is, kind of puts himself in the position of everything has to come through me. This is my team. Like I say, it was fine and dandy when you are a guy in a position like a Michael Jordan, like a Magic Johnson was, like a Larry Bird. But, you know, he needs to stop it. He really does. I think that it's time for him to go. He's 36. He's getting paid a gazillion dollars, the highest paid player in the NBA, whose skills have certainly diminished. Good player still? Yes. I'm not going to, you know, dispute that. He's still a good player, but he's not the player that makes people around him good. And he can't get the talent around him to make that team, I think, really viable again for a championship. It's not going to happen. So that's all I'm going to say about it. Pretty much ending the day on that note, being that, you know, the NBA season is, they're coming around. They're in their preseason now and just about in full swing. They'll start games here in a couple of days. Then the NBA season will be going. Everybody's be looking to see what Cleveland Cavaliers are going to do since LeBron is back in town. That's going to be pretty interesting to watch them and see if that team can, you know, if they're destined to be in a championship like everybody thinks. They think that he has a team that can do it. We'll see what happens with that as we go along. We're done for today. We'll be back next week, folks, next Wednesday. And we promise to do a little bit better here. But thank you for listening up right here on Talk Zone Radio, the Gerald Riggs Network. Talk show is called Gerald Riggs Underneath the Helmet, folks. We'll be seeing you guys next week. You can tweet me at Gerald Riggs Net, or again, you can email me too at GeraldRiggsNetwork.com. All right. We enjoyed that. We'll be back again next week and, like I say, do a little bit better. Until then, God bless everybody. Take care. See you later.